And we are live. You're listening to Anything Is Possible Radio, WMFO 91.5 in Medford. Here we are today on Anything Is Possible, talking about some big topics. And yeah, listening to a song by Jai Paul entitled Jasmine. It was a demo he made himself. Hope you enjoyed. Anyways, now we got Jay Dilla's background and we're ready to go. Today on the show, we have Lance HK. How you doing?
What's good, James?
Just chilling. Kicking back, having a good time.
It's great to hear.
Talking on the radio a little bit, you know. Yeah, dude.
Life couldn't be better.
Yeah, man. We got Brian Jerf in the studio.
How's it going, everyone?
Good.
How's it going, Greater Medford area?
Greater Medford area. We want to know your thoughts. We want to know what wavelength you're at.
Medford / Somerville.
You know, Cambridge too. We can't forget them.
/ Cambridge.
You know, Boston. That's a good one as well.
/ Boston.
All of them. You know, where whatever town you're at and listening to this radio show, you could be in Africa. You could be in Mongolia.
China.
Japan. Europe.
The country of Europe.
You could even be in the country of North America. Wherever you're at, you're listening to Anything Is Possible on WMFO with our first segment of the evening. We found ancient peoples making wine. A winery. This is a big story this week. Brought to you by Brian Jerf. He's got all the details.
The oldest evidence of winemaking was discovered at an 8,000-year-old village.
8,000?
Where?
Less than 20 miles south of, I don't know how to pronounce this city, but in Georgia.
In Georgia?
Yep.
The European country. Right? Is that true?
I would assume so. Six that.
Well, we know.
6,000 BC.
6,000 BC. Wow.
That's early.
That's four Jesuses ago.
They're producing wine on a large scale as well.
On a large scale, really?
This was back when, like, the first tools were being used, you know?
And people were already using it to get turned.
Exactly.
Yo, shout out the savages from 6,000 BC.
Savage. They're like, should we fight this saber-toothed tiger? Were they around at that time?
Maybe. They'd probably get turned and like have gladiator fights with them.
That's incredible. You know, to be even a primitive human is to be a dominant species in just about everywhere you go.
Yeah.
It's like, unbelievable.
Like, you can say we weren't as dominant earlier on, which is true.
Right.
But like, we were pretty dominant, you know?
Like, we just like, we can go anywhere.
Humans were major contenders in the environmental war.
They're major contenders.
Major contenders.
It took the extinction of the dinosaurs for mammals to start taking over.
Oh, there you go.
And hard.
So were dinosaurs just straight up, like, better? They were too good for mammals to...
Yeah, man,
it
was like scurried away.
What are you gonna do?
And dude, then they hid in caves, and then all the dinosaurs died, and they were like, "Oh,
dude, that
can evolve now."
That explains why, like, the one pretty much like remaining dinosaurish species, obviously the crocodiles,
Or sharks.
Yeah, birds.
Is also up there.
Crocodiles and sharks, you know? The ones that, like, are most closely resembling dinosaurs.
And they're, birds.
Birds have a good good case as well. The fact that birds specifically evolved from dinosaurs.
But, like, they all, where is it going with this?
They all, so they live in tropical, or no, sharks don't.
No, but they're all apex predators.
They're all apex predators, yeah, there you go.
And they're just shadows of what dinosaurs used to be. So
right.
Clearly dinosaurs just had to be so disproportionately better species than us. Like, if they were on the Earth right now, maybe not right now, but right now we've gotten too out of hand. But earlier on...
Yeah, too much tech.
Yeah, we've got too much stuff.
If there were a bunch of dinosaurs running around in Africa, would we have human beings? You know
exactly.
What I mean? No,
probably
maybe not. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, wow.
So, like, thank God.
Yeah, we got super lucky.
Yeah.
We got super lucky every step of the way.
Or we just waited till the perfect time. Or just nothing waited, but it just happened to be at the perfect time.
True. Which is lucky.
Crocodiles.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I guess so that there was an opportunity for it.
Crocodiles are crazy dope.
Crocodiles.
Evolutionarily unchanged for 60,000 years.
My mom saw a dragonfly die. She saw a dead dragonfly. She was like, "You've been alive since the dinosaurs, and now you're dead." So that is like some Ken M type stuff right there.
What is the average lifespan of a dragonfly, do you know?
A few months. Is it? I don't know. We gotta look this up.
I think it's gotta be like a couple months.
All right, fact checking.
Yeah.
No, fact checking. Anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
They live for 45 minutes.
Dragonflies reach sexual maturity in 49 seconds.
7 months.
7 months.
Yeah.
We got it.
It's like just a bad interpretation of like Jurassic Park or something.
Yeah. But also a joke.
Yeah, I know.
Also a really clever... I mean, like, who knows? You know, that's potentially a... Just not a clever joke at all. The opposite of a clever joke. There's an insect who has a lifespan of 24 hours. You know about this?
What insect?
Mayflies.
Interesting.
So if you go on Lake Champlain, and I'm talking about the lake between Vermont and New York, at most of their border, you will find thousands upon thousands of skeleton looking things, and they're dead mayflies.
Damn.
It's because it's like mayfly season. They just start coming up, and they're like so many of them, and they die within 24.
They're like a helper function for life.
Yeah,
they just do one really specific thing really quick.
Helper function. Very true. They're like, and they're always like riding with each other, because I mean, like, you've got one day, you're gonna mate in that day, you're gonna grow up and mate in one day.
I wonder how long it feels to them, you know, like, I wonder if they perceive it as like,
can they perceive time?
Years.
Yeah, probably.
I don't think they perceive anything.
I mean, can they, like, yeah, you're right. There's like, yeah, there's nothing
I feel
going
like
on.
They perceive in the same way a robot perceives,
right.
You know what I mean?
Their body can, like, keep track of time. But
in a similar way.
Like, it's not like they really have anything going on.
They have a biological clock.
Right.
Like, they have, like, an aging mechanism.
I wonder if it's, like, panicky. Like they feel themselves getting really weak really quickly. And they're like, oh, my God, it's happening.
No.
Oh, no. Like, you live your whole life, like, rushed and panicky.
You're just like, oh, what's going on now? What am I? I'm a mayfly. I'm flying around. Where's another one? Where's another one? Where's another? Oh, I found it. All right. And I'm dead. And I'm floating in the lake. and little kids are grossed out by me now. They can't even go in the water. It's like the middle of the lake, you know? It's because of just sheer volume.
They're
just bodies. Anyways, anything is possible. Radio 91.5, Medford/Somerville. I hope if anybody listening at the cross-country meeting going on right now, which was timely thrown at exactly 10 p.m. on Monday night, the very slot of Anything Is Possible Radio. I hope you're enjoying this show right now, because I know you're listening. I know everyone just stopped having a meeting and turning the show on and just listen to it, because that's exactly what happened. But I hope you're having a good time. That's not what happened. They're having a meeting and they're not listening to Anything Is Possible Radio. And they're also not available to be on Anything Is Possible Radio. If you know what I mean, I'm talking about, you know, some usuals who are on the cross country team currently and are, you know, not here.
Yo, free Young McDermott, free Martins.
Agreed. Yep. Free them. Mm-hmm. Free them.
They're in desperate need of liberation.
They're trying to get liberated.
Yo,
they're trying to pull it off.
What's the Dolphins score right now? Yo, in other news, do you guys watch that UM football game?
UM, we're talking about the University of Miami, a university in Florida, Miami, Florida, who has a football team. What happened?
Did you, they played Notre Dame this weekend, and Notre Dame was ranked number 3 at the time.
Number 3.
And the U was ranked number 7.
It's a pretty good rank too.
And this is a big rivalry game. The U and Notre Dame had a very unpleasant history during like the 90s and 2000s.
Right, I can imagine.
The rivalry was called the Catholics versus Convicts.
Oh, wow.
And like everyone always called the U a bunch of convicts. And so an important thing to note about the UM team this season is the turnover chain.
Uh-huh.
UM wins mainly by how dope their defense is. They just force an insane amount of turnovers, and they're just so fast and good and score a lot of points. They have an incredible defense. They are propelled by this thing called the turnover chain, which is a literal big, flashy Cuban link chain with a ginormous U, like UM logo on it.
Right.
And whenever a player gets a takeaway, gets a turnover,
right,
he gets to wear the turnover chain.
The turnover chain.
And it's this enormous, and it's super hype. And right, they've been getting an insane amount of turnovers. So now, like, there's a bunch of media coverage about it. So then, like, whenever anyone gets the turnover chain, it's a huge thing. And the entire team's, they're, like, dancing with their boys. And then they jump up, like, onto the stands. And they, like, shout at the crowd. And they know they're going to be on national TV. So, they know it's the turnover chain now.
They have an unbelievable amount of incentive to get that turnover.
So now, like, you see them, and they're so pissed when they, like, drop what could have been interceptions. Like,
right,
they used to be like, yeah, they used to, like, celebrate sometimes when they drop interceptions and be like, oh, yeah, like, we made it be an incomplete pass. But now, like, they're pissed. They're like, damn, I could have gotten the turnover chain. And, like, they get so, and also, like, a lot of times when you get turnovers, like, you kind of make fun of the enemy team, and, like, you're in the enemy team's face, like, haha, like, we took it from you.
Right.
But, like, as soon as one of the players gets a turnover, like, no one cares about Notre Dame anymore. They're just rushing. They're, like, rushing off the sidelines to, like, because they know the turnover chain's getting brought out, and they know it's going to be super hype.
Right, that's incredible.
So UM, number 7 UM against number 3 Notre Dame did not allow a single point in the first half. It was, like, 28 or like 34-0 at the half.
Oh my god,
it was insane.
It's just working that well.
It was they had like 70 total yards or something.
What a scheme.
And yeah, they ended up destroying them like 42 to maybe 8.
Wow.
And now UM shot up to number 2 in the rankings behind Alabama.
There you go.
The U's back, baby. Dude, you gotta,
U is back.
You got to look up the turnover chain on YouTube.
We'll be looked up. We'll be looked up. In related news, we're talking about the Cleveland Cavaliers. Rode the subway in New York City earlier today. LeBron was taking a video of himself riding the subway. Apparently accidentally elbowed a man who was super pissed because he ended up getting in LeBron's video. And LeBron's like, I don't know who this guy is. And the guy was like, stop taking a video of me, guy. Like, clearly with no regard for the fact that it's LeBron James. And it makes you step back and realize, you know, not everybody cares. There you go. But interesting event. They get in the game today. Cavaliers-Knicks, I'm talking about. I'm talking about Kristaps Porzingis versus LeBron James. A hype matchup. The Knicks are up by 20 come halftime or something like that. Then, like, Kyle Korver gets hot. The Cavaliers come back, win the game by 3. RIP, Knicks. But, you know, good fight. It was a good game.
Good fight.
Go NBA. Let's go basketball. yeah, there you go. In other related basketball news, the University of Vermont.
UVM.
Their basketball program is getting really good. They just played Kentucky and lost by 4. Like, that's pretty good. You know? They provided a real competition to that Kentucky team.
Hey, James. More cows than people. More love than hate. Vermont, the Green Mountain State.
More love than hate. There you go.
Love, not hate.
Love, not hate. This is a battle between... Politics is a battle between love and hate. Everybody knows that. But yeah, there you go.
No bombs.
Yeah, man. Now that's crazy. It's a segue to the next segment. It's called the school segment. We're going to learn something. Very academic.
We're going to learn some school.
We're going to get schooled. Today we're talking about Uncanny Valley. This is a principle in aesthetics, which is a hypothesized relationship between the degree of an object's resemblance to a human being and the emotional response to such an object. The graph of this phenomena shows that if you get pretty close to getting a robot to look like a human, right, you're going to have like a pretty good emotional response. You know, people are going to really like it. And that's a bump on the graph. But as you go closer towards looking like a human, then that point, you start to see a little drop in emotional response. People don't respond as well to the robot. I'd like to interrupt this message by announcing the fact that we've got 2 new guests in the studio. These men are named Matthew McDermott.
Am I on?
He's on.
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Am I plugged in? That's the real question.
Well, he's in the studio. And he's, you know, he's feeling good. We've also got Jackson Mim in the house.
I'm back.
How's it going? Always happy to be here, James. I trust the show has been going well so far, talking probably about a lot of academic, good speaking points.
We talked about turnover chain.
Yeah, we definitely weren't talking about that.
You guys talking about the turnover chain?
We're talking about turnover chain.
Okay, so I saw a video of the Notre Dame coach. Now, mind you, their whole thing is that it's a Catholic school. That,
right.
You know, in this rivalry, they have the moral high ground. because UM has always been, University of Miami has always been portrayed as thugs.
Right.
And there was a video of one of the Notre Dame offensive coaches just cursing for like 30 seconds about how much he hated that effing turnover chain and how he wanted to see it ripped off the face of the earth during that game. And then they proceeded to get, the University of Miami Hurricanes proceeded to get 4 turnovers during the game.
Incredible. That is the way to shut somebody down.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I grew up watching that team, and every year they would jump out to a 5-0 start.
I
think that it's going to be a great season.
Yep.
And then they would lose their first game against a good opponent, and it would, they would go 500 that year. But it's good to see the U back in the national limelight.
And especially after the whole Nevin Shapiro thing, it was tough to watch. They lost so many good recruits because of the sanctions.
Yeah, recruiting has never been a problem for the university. It's always been coaching and consistently like having players that commit to the system. And Mark Richt has a system, I think, that will lead to success in the future. Maybe national titles even.
Yeah. No, I was talking about the like the what were we talking about?
The turnover chain.
Turnover chain. Turnover chain. It was made by AJ Machado, Miami's King of Bling.
AJ.
He makes like Rick Ross's chains. This guy's a dope boy extraordinaire when it comes to chains.
It's pretty tight. Chains, ever popular, very fresh. They're chains. Anyways, the segment, the academic segment, the academia segment. Let's finish it. Uncanny Valley. So when you get closer to the appearance of a human in a robot face, from that, you know, pretty good point, you start to see them drop off in emotional response. People don't like it as much. People are creeped out by it.
They call this the Uncanny Valley.
The Uncanny Valley. But then when you get closer again, and you get really close to the human, then it's like, all right, we're going way up with emotional response. People are really digging this face because, you know, it's just like just about it, you know?
Though you, those of you at home, I don't know if you guys brought this up yet, but you should go onto the Google and look up. You should go onto Google and look up Polar Express, classic film, if you haven't seen it before, and you'll learn all about Uncanny Valley and how it's disturbing to have an animatronic humanoid that's 90% human-looking, but not completely.
Right, they were almost there with that.
It was really creepy.
Right, right. They were in the Uncanny Valley with that. There you go. Polar Express, classic movie. Check it out.
Isn't Polar Express the one where the kid gets on the train to the North Pole?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be the one.
It's that one. Indeed. That film.
So that's the one that teaches you about animatronics?
No. Okay, yeah. So this movie, the animation style in this movie.
We're doing the segment again. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, wait. Keep going. Yeah, so no, the animation style in that movie was too close to human looking, and it like really weirded everybody out. Like,
oh,
they were like just trying to make these animated characters look as close to human as possible.
I like the Polar Express though.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
This just in.
Did you guys talk? Have you guys
what
talked
about the polar bears?
I like the bears. Did you know? Fun fact. I don't know if I brought this up on the radio. There is a grizzly bear in Yosemite National Park that has been seen eating at least 2 other brown bears or black bears.
That's unbelievable.
This is a giant grizzly bear that hunts and kills and eats other bears.
Bears in the Yosemite area. Yeah, this
bear,
is a PSA to you.
A bear serial cannibal.
I mean, they're not the same species, so I don't know if that's technically cannibalism, but this bear is hunting other bears. Like, that's how alpha it is.
Wants to eat some of that.
My goodness gracious.
There you go. We're talking about bears. We're talking about polar bears. Yo, of what ratio, if you were to start a fight between polar bears and grizzly bears, in what proportion do you think it would work out to be an even fight?
Whose polar bears are bigger, right?
I think the polar bear would take down a grizzly bear because...
No, isn't it? I think a grizzly bear is bigger, isn't it?
I think the polar bear is the biggest bear in the world.
Okay, as an aficionado of bears, the largest bear is actually the Kodiak bear, which is an offshoot of the grizzly bear, only present in in Alaska and the Yukon region of Canada. But this bear is severely endangered.
The Kodiak bear.
Kodiak bear. But
are you a bear? Are you a bear enthusiast?
I am a bear enthusiast. But the polar bear is actually larger than the grizzly bear. But the grizzly bear is more aggressive, so this is a tough fight. I don't know.
Libraryofcongress.gov says, biggest bear in the world, the polar bear. It is a close call, but the polar bear is generally considered the largest bear on Earth. A close second is the brown bear, specifically the Kodiak bear. This is a disputed argument here.
Okay, I guess I've been proven to be fake news.
Anything's possible. Just so that the ratio, though, where does this fight take place? Is it like in a gym? Is it on like a soccer pitch?
I think it's in a gym.
Do they get water, though? Because if there's water involved, I feel like the polar bear's got it easy.
Okay, no water.
No water.
It's a land fight. It's an MMA fight.
Is it like scratchy? Are they on like grass? Are they on snow? Are they on rocks?
They're in an MMA ring. They're in a Mortal Kombat type situation.
Yo, grizzly bears are pretty fast, right?
Yeah.
How fast are polar bears?
Polar bears can't like climb either because they're not used to trees, I don't think.
I think the ratio of 1-1 would be like pretty fair.
Okay.
You know, they're one's like bigger, but one's smaller, more aggressive, and faster.
Yeah. That's
okay.
Fair. I think they would kind of cancel out because I can't imagine a situation in which if there's an extra polar bear, they don't automatically win. And I can't imagine a situation in which if there's not an extra grizzly bear, they don't automatically win.
Right.
So it has to be 1-1.
There you go.
What if it was like 3-2?
What if it's
10-9?
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you have even one extra, not like the proportion, like five extra, like if you just have one extra as a raw number, mm-hmm. I think they win.
Interesting.
1,000 to 1,001.
Yeah.
Yo, grizzly bears can run 35 miles per hour.
Unbelievable.
I think the grizzly bears got it then. Because when I think of a polar bear, they're clever and they sneak up on the seals, but they don't really like chase a seal down, you know?
They can run 25 miles per hour, which is still pretty good.
Oh, they can't. There's
And they're real big.
I'll respectfully disagree. I think the polar bear, I'd rather fight a grizzly bear than a polar bear. I think the polar bear is more formidable. But this is clearly a not a clean cut issue here.
All right.
We're talking about different intangibles, different animals.
We need a simulation.
Yeah, we need to simulate this with Epic Battle Simulator. Have you seen this game?
That game's crazy.
You can simulate battles. Like
epic battles.
Battles between Roman, like any army in history versus another. You can have like Spartans. You can have like a small amount of Spartans take on a large amount of other.
This is across time periods?
Yeah, you can play as any army.
And you can place any formation in any number of units, like on a battlefield. You can have a hill. You can have all these different like scenarios. It's really cool.
Is online?
This is a game you can download, yeah. Oh, it's on Steam.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling me this.
Mod it too. So you can have like Santas versus penguins.
That's a crazy one.
Like they got videos of this stuff.
And they have like tens of thousands of penguins versus tens of thousands of Santas.
And it's like the computer you need to run that simulation, it's got to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
What was that Reddit thread we were talking about a while ago with like the one military unit in current United States?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, tell us about it.
So there was this Reddit thing. This is probably like 5 or 6 years back. I read it in Wired magazine in early high school, and it turned out to be originally from Reddit, but it was this theoretical situation between like one branch of the US Army somehow gets like transported back in time to ancient Rome and all of their fixed wing aircraft break. So they have like a few helicopters, but not like none of their planes or bombers or any of that stuff.
Right.
And they have the access to like all the weapons and ammunition they would have normally in that kind of like one platoon or something. But like, it's like there's people heavily arguing either side.
There you go.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Wow.
What do you guys think?
I didn't follow any of that.
I think I feel like the current soldiers, right? The U.S. soldiers.
What's whatever. The proportion again?
It's like 100. I think it was like 100-1.
100-1.
Maybe a little less than that. But it was like the U.S. military were like severely outnumbered.
And they didn't have bombers.
No, they have some helicopters, but they don't have. And I think they still had.
They got tanks.
I'm not sure if they were allowed. I think they had Humvees. I know they had Humvees.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like they win.
I feel like there's a good chance they could win at 100-1. That's interesting. But who knows?
What was, do you know, do either of you guys, Jackson, you probably know this, the ratio of Cortez? Cortez the Killers. What was his ratio when they took over the Aztecs? Yeah.
So I can't speak to that, the exact proportions, but what I do know is that a force of probably less than 5,000 Spaniards basically allied themselves with the tribes or the groups in Mexico that had historically been vassal states of the Aztecs, because the Aztecs basically just, they ruled the central plain of Mexico. And what basically happened is the Spanish used all of their old enemies to ally with them, and they just totally crumbled everything that the Aztec civilization had come so far in conquering. The more crazy one is Francisco Pizarro and his force in Peru.
Oh yeah, this is the one. This is the one.
Yeah.
So this guy, they showed up. How many did Pizarro have?
Like 300.
Yeah. So they had 300 Spaniards on horses and with like some level of armor. Like they had like
guns.
And they had, did they have guns? Oh, they did have guns. Okay. And they completely, was it the Incas?
Yeah, it was the Incas. And basically what ended up happening here was they figured out that the whole society, whole Incan society revolved around the emperor. And when they killed emperor, when they ended up just having a meeting with this emperor and they killed him, and then the whole society just crumbled like that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, crazy.
And how did they get this? How did they get to the emperor?
Well, they were looked at as like gods.
Oh, and so they just. But I thought the first fight they had, because there was some resistance to them, didn't they just like on horseback, just like totally.
No, I can't speak to that.
Oh, okay. Never mind. But they were. Was it Montezuma who jumped down his Great
Montezuma
Pyramid?
Montezuma was an Aztec.
And he, like, committed suicide or something?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Imagine.
And then, so here's a funny thing. So when Americans go to Mexico,
I know. Yeah. I've had it.
So I've had it too. So this is a commonly known thing, and it's called Montezuma's Revenge.
Oh yeah.
The food poisoning that Americans get in Mexico is so bad because we aren't used to the spices that they use in their food.
Right.
And we don't, like, have the same level. Like, our food is so processed.
Uh-huh.
We don't have the same level of, like, microorganisms in our food that
right.
we do in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
So, and these are healthy for the human body. It's just we're not used to them.
Right.
Eating a heavily processed diet. That, and I will say this, the diarrhea I got when I was in Mexico was unbearable. And this is a known thing.
Tell us more.
Montezuma's Revenge is a very real phenomenon.
That's so funny that they call it that. It's
yeah.
so funny.
Yeah.
It's like, take that.
Yeah, worst.
Gringo.
Worst. Did you guys ever, when I was like, getting into running, like when I say like getting in, like I would, when I would, back when I would go out after work on like a 14-mile run in like 80-degree weather, I would get like after dinner, like I would get the worst run shits. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And there's this one time when I'm up at the lake and I'm running around Brent Lake, which is in upstate New York, and it is 14 miles around the lake, and I got like halfway around, I had to go, and there's like not really many houses, there's no public facilities or anything, it's just like
right
random backwoods place, whatever.
Right.
Duck into the woods after, like, you know, I can't, it was like really like I had to go, there was no other way. I climb up like this big hillside on the side of the road, and there's a big rock with some nice moss on it. I'm like, oh, I'll check this out. And it was like perfectly, this the way the sunlight came down and illuminated it, it was like God's gift to me to shit there. And so I go up, and I'm like on this, like there's one rock on the ground and one behind it, and it's just perfectly illuminating the sunlight. I'm taking my shorts down, and just instant, it looked like someone had been like leaned against the wall and shot in the head. The splatter was like all over,
like a Tarantino shot.
Yeah, it was just, it was disgusting. And then I realized I was like
wildly graphic.
I was like off the side of this, like I was off the side of the road, but there was a like a gravel driveway that I thought went way into the woods to my the side, and I realized that it was like someone's driveway, and I was essentially in someone's front yard. I just took off.
I call that
a classic tale.
A big fat mess.
A mistake.
That's a mistake. Yeah, no, for real.
Dude, my
it's
dad.
It's also a waste.
My dad. This.
You're dead.
This at the end of the summer we went hiking in the Peruvian Andes, and on I think our third day we were at around like 14,000 feet.
It's high up in the air.
Oh my goodness, it was very high up in the air. A couple people had altitude sickness so bad that they couldn't walk. They had to be like put on horses.
Wow.
But my dad. Cause like we were eating like just like some food up in like some mountain food, you know what I'm talking about?
Right.
So we were eating some indigenous food.
Mountain food.
And my dad on the second day at 13,000 feet, literally miles away from any sort of civilization, has just like heated stomach pains, and we end up going up to like 14,000. The highest it went was 15,000, but we got to about right. 14,000. We were at like some dope cliff. It was an incredible vista. My dad's just like, yeah, I'm gonna need to take care of this. I'm gonna need to go do some diarrhea over this cliff. So like it was just like an incredibly beautiful landscape, like high up in the mountains, like the clouds look super weird because you're super high up. The sky's super blue and bright. And my dad's just like diarrheaing over the cliff.
Oh my god, he's a legend. There's something so big, fat waste. Satisfying about peeing off a big cliff.
Yeah,
I'm terrified of heights. Jackson just witnessed it as we were coming in here through the fire escape, and I was not a happy camper up there. But like getting like working your way closer and closer to the edge, and just like being able to get that stream over. I apologize for all of our listeners out there who don't want to hear me talk about me going to the bathroom, but I'm sorry. Anything's possible.
Anything. You got to understand, this is good content. I mean, you might not like it right now, but like, you're wrong if you don't like it. So
that's a bad opinion.
Your opinion is wrong. Yeah. Anyway, you're listening to Anything Is Possible Radio, WMFO 91.5, Medford/Somerville/Cambridge/Boston/... Weymouth,
Alston,
you know, all of those good ones.
Brockton,
Dedham, Ked.
Anyway,
Winthrop.
these instrumental tunes
Cape
got me
Cod,
in the mood.
Maine, Boston, Gloucester.
I'm We're gonna hear Thuggin'.
Bulger. I'm Dor- a lobster. Dorchester.
We're gonna hear Thuggin' by Madlib and Freddie Gibbs. So I hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening to WMFO.
Nigga ain't running. Somebody. Nigga ain't running no more. The Legend of Nick in Color, rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Yeah. So, nigga, you know, be like, yo, yo, a friend, you a real nigga, though.
Yes, baby.
Real nigga, you like shit.
Front to the back.
Respect, nigga. Respect. Respect, nigga, the Lord the body. Niggas be like, Fred, you ain't never lied. Fuck the rap shit, my gangsta been solidified. Still do my business on the side. Bitch, if you police, then pay me, no, never mind. I was thugging, black and red laces in my number threes. Take a pull up off the wood and let that motherfucker breathe. Sit outside of Buster crib and let that motherfucker leave. Walk his ass back in and put him on his motherfucking knees. Thugging, never taking no for an answer. Might just take a loss, but bitch, I'd rather take my chances. This liquor got me lurking where you live at in the nighttime. 59-50 to the left, but I'm in my right mind. Thugging, pants gon' be sagging till I'm 40. Still lyrically sharper than any show. But show you phonies ain't gon' throw me in this minstrel show. These labels see how far up in their mouth my dick could go. So gon' choke on this meat, throw my song on repeat. Might move away one day, but I'm always gon' belong to the streets. So straight thug, and it feels so good, and it feels so right, yeah, and it feels so good, and it feels so right. Cause motherfucker, I'm thuggin', selling you the signs of the street rap. Every motherfucking show I do is off the meat rap. I done been in jail and did my best not to repeat that. I'm trying to feed my family, give a fuck about your feedback. Critically acclaimed, but that shit don't mean a thing. When you rockin' mics and still in microwaves, cooking cane. Never trickin' on the dame, I'm too cold for you broke hoes. Don't let the knob hit your booty when the door closed, bitch. She let me hit it cause I'm thuggin'. Squares need not apply, I'm so fly, I might fuck a cousin. Swiftly about to stick a sweet dick in your sweetheart. Then get some groceries off my Giga EBT card. Why the feds worry about me clocking on this corner when there's politicians out here getting popped in Arizona, bitch? I'm thuggin', bitch. And it feels so good, and it feels so right, yeah, yeah, baby. And it feels so good, and it feels so right. Cause yo, motherfucker, yo, we're not against rap, but we're against those thugs. Can't be legit when every nigga in your clique sold drugs. Predicate fellas in my faculty, real killers can vouch for me. Teach your kid at the crib or your children might cop an ounce from me. And smoke out in the Chevy with us. Cause in the past, my low class black ass and serve my own fucking family members. I hate to say it, ain't no need to be discreet. If she don't cop from me, she get it from a nigga up the street. Cause he thug. And yo, she probably suck his dick for it. She turned out, so it ain't shit to turn a trick for it. My uncle last bitch put him on the glass dick. Tried to rob a man to feed his habit, he got blasted. I live on borrowed time, my expiration date, I passed it. So lock me up forever, but this shit is everlasting. I'm thugging, and it feels so good, and it feels so right, yeah, and it feels so good, and it feels so right. Cause motherfucker, I'm thugging, bitch.
And we're back. We're talking about WMFR Radio. We're talking about, you know, Freddie Gibbs and Madlib. We're talking about those artists. That was a good track, right? This is one of McDermott's favorite albums, right? Pinata?
Excellent album.
It's great stuff.
Excellent record.
Anyway, we're going to transition to a new segment. This segment is called Matthew McDermott Reads a Public Service Announcement. And take it away, Matt McD.
Order your free vegetarian starter kit at PETA.org. You knew it. You knew I was going for one of these. Did you know that you could save 100 animals per year by just adopting a meat-free diet? That's right. Going vegetarian saves animal lives as well as your own. And that's not appealing enough. It's tasty, easy, and can be incredibly inexpensive as well. To start you off saving real money at the grocery store while eating healthier, PETA will send you a free vegetarian starter kit. So, what do you say? Just Google free vegetarian starter kit and go to the PETA website link. Then fill out the form there to receive a free copy of PETA's vegetarian and vegan starter kit. Or view the online version that's posted there. Wait, so this starter kit is just
It is not food or anything.
I'll be honest. I thought at first you were saying the starter kit is a pita.
No.
This is how you eat vegetarian. Eat a lot of pitas.
No. It's by pita. Anyway.
Pita, the organization, in case you didn't know.
People for the equal treatment of animals.
The equal treatment of animals.
It will guide you.
Pita.
It will guide you.
Equal treatment?
It will guide you.
As in like,
it will guide.
As in like
it will
equal to.
It will guide you through the transition to a healthier, happier, and longer lasting life. It has everything from recipes and tips on eating out to health information and videos.
That's not a funny joke.
PETA.org. This has been a public service announcement from people for the ethical treatment of animals and your tomato mushroom. And your tomato, mushroom, and onion-loving friends here at WMFO.
Onion-loving friends.
Yeah.
Okay. So, is it over?
Yeah, it's over. You can go ahead.
Okay. So, the inexpensive part, I think that's definitely a valid point, you know?
Could be.
Saving animal lives, if that, you know, that's something.
Right, that's something.
Now, when they say delicious... I was gonna say like probably not healthier. I mean,
probably
debatable.
Most
debatable.
Depends what you want your health image to be.
Right,
that's Instagram healthy. I don't know if it's like real healthy, but
I've also heard a lot about, you know what I mean, meat could potentially be a lot worse for us than we think.
Interesting.
But I don't know.
People, especially Americans, way overeat meat.
Right. Maybe it's just the overeating. Maybe like you're only supposed to be eating a small amount of meat, like, and that's the healthy amount or whatever. But who knows? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Here's another.
This isn't settled.
Here's another announcement from PETA. This isn't written down on the page, but they're against pet ownership, and 90% of the pets that are donated to them are euthanized.
Good job, PETA.
That's a true fact. Look it up.
It's a true fact.
R.I.P. 90% of animals.
No, it might even be higher. Yo, do you have someone?
No, like not like that. I don't believe it. I've heard a stat that shocked me. That was that exact stat.
Well, you know what? It's PETAKillsAnimals.org. Here's another PSA for you guys.
We're getting counter PSA. PSA wars.
Yes. So PETA saves animals, PETA.org. Next, that was the sponsored link. Now, the link below it, PETA kills animals, PETAKillsAnimals.org. No way. Warning, some of the content on the site is potentially disturbing. I'll never learn to. 97.3%!
97.3%? Oh my god.
Of animals under PETA's control have been killed in 1 year.
Jeez. Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Although I wonder how many of those are like
pets,
toy poodles. Because if people are giving me toy poodle, you know.
Ooh, that's interesting.
That's a kind of dog.
That's a hot take.
That's a hot take. There, I thought you were going the complete other way with that one. Yeah. I thought you were going to be livestock. We'll kill them.
What if people are donating like goldfish or like dying animal? Like I don't know.
Oh yeah,
I'm doing
People are donating dying animals. You gotta be honest with yourself and say, like, what are they gonna do with this animal? I mean, like, I guess that's the same thing as just putting it down yourself, essentially. But, like, in a more indirect way where you don't have to deal with it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. In 2016, PETA received 1,963 dogs. They adopted 57... transferred 478 and killed 1,411.
Unbelievable.
So that's a 72% kill rate.
What's their reasoning?
They don't like pet ownership, I guess. Visit PETA's shelter. Oh my god.
That's wild.
It's a warehouse. It's a warehouse.
Speaking of,
oh my god,
dead bodies of living things.
Right.
Would you guys donate your bodies to science?
Yeah, 100%.
Definitely.
100%.
Yes.
I saw a video this weekend of Neil deGrasse Tyson. I think it was with you, Brian. Where he was saying that when he dies, he is 100% just gonna not get cremated. I mean, I think it's the view of most scientists that they're just gonna get buried the old traditional way, because if you think about it, we're all just matter, we're all just carbon, and the best way you can, like, I mean, this is gonna sound like a little faux science and like oh, the universe, but like, you give your own living matter, or I guess it's dead now, back into the soil, and then other living things like microorganisms and, you know, decomposers can, like, then use that to live.
Right. You live on.
You live
on. Your matter lives on.
Your matter lives on through, I guess, trees and other things that
you can fungi. Your matter lives on regardless.
Well, not if you cremate yourself.
No. Your matter can't be destroyed. Your matter...
In a different way. It's true.
Your matter lives on regardless.
But, like, it's feeding the earth instead of being... There's becoming carbon dioxide or whatever.
There are these forests I've seen in Finland that they're doing where they...
Finland.
Or Sweden, somewhere, one of those countries.
Forests.
Yeah, so when you die...
Norway.
No. Okay, I'm sorry. My geography's a little weak. But one of these countries that I'm just sort of throwing up.
Scandinavia.
Okay, one of these Scandinavian countries.
Denmark?
It doesn't matter.
One of these Scandinavian countries. When you die, people are doing this thing where they get buried... under a sapling tree.
Right.
And so the root system of the tree eventually grows around your body, and within like 10-20 years you're completely absorbed by the tree. Like, all of your body is inside the tree, and is like turned into the tree's material. So you, like, just become a tree.
There you go.
That's,
and there's these giant forests of, like, it started out as a field, and like, they're putting trees in rows, and just this instead of a cemetery with gravestones, it's just these massive trees
that
live really long. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah, oh, that is really cool. Because, like, tombstones, I mean, it's pretty eerie, you know? Like,
yeah,
having
a
forest instead of that, you know?
Yeah. Forest would be sick. And, like, it'd be, like, a sacred, like, no one, like, would go here, you know? Just, like, it's just animals. It's just trees.
Right.
It's, like, humans doing their giving back. I don't know.
There you go. We're talking about trees, humans, death, bodies, letting the bodies hit the floor. You know, just
would you, James,
all good things.
Would you donate your body to science?
Yeah, I think I'd do that.
I think I'd do that as well.
Yeah, I'd do that.
For
sure.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's the question.